Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and tonight we got a special episode here. Brad, Ked, and I will be reviewing a couple of movies. First off, we will start with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, give you our opinions on that, talk about what we saw. Then we'll have a quick recruiting update because there's a lot going on in the transfer portal. And then Ked and I will talk about Fast 10, and we'll give you our thoughts on that. But before we get started, let's take a listen to this commercial.
A tradition of excellence over 150 years in the making. At Busey Bank, we're committed to building relationships that span generations. Wherever your journey in life leads you, we are with you along the way, creating a legacy for you and your family. Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868, proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini. Member FDIC.
All right, welcome back. It's time for the Illini guys. We're going to be doing some movie reviews, and a couple things. We have some ground rules here for Illini guys movie reviews. We're probably not going to do romantic comedies. If there's movies that you have to have, you know, some emotional depth for, I doubt we're going to review that either. If it's action, adventure, random violence for no apparent reason,
then we're in.
We are there in the front row. And just so everybody knows, you know, I'm one of the Cinemark Platinum members, so I've bought advance tickets for multiple movies going out to the 4th of July weekend. So I am primed to be ready for movie reviewing season this summer. But before we start into our first movie review, which will be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I wanted to do a real quick note here and kind of a sad one. Ray Stevenson passed away today, I believe 58 years old. And for those of you who are Marvel fans, he was Volstagg the Voluminous, the big chunky guy in the Thor movies. And where a lot of us remember him from is he was Titus Pullo in Rome, which was one of HBO's greatest series. I have no idea why they only did it for 2 years. The ratings were good. It was a fantastic show. And really, I think he was kind of supposed to be the sidekick. And he kind of took over the show a little bit because of the intensity with which he played his role. Brad, were you much of a Ray Stevenson fan?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, in those roles that you just talked about, I had seen him. And then I was actually excited to see him in Ahsoka, the new yes. Star Wars show. He was a part of that. It comes out in August. So, yeah, I mean, I was a fan. I was probably not as in-depth with him as you, but, I mean, I remember seeing him, and I liked his character. So, you know, it was good. It's a shame. He's only 58. I mean, that's young.
That's a lot of that going around, and it's a scary, scary world we live in.
So it's really sad. Hopefully we'll see him in a couple of these projects that he's finished and completed that haven't come out yet.
Yeah, you know what, it kind of caught me off guard today too. I mean, which obviously that does with anybody, but you're right, 58 years old, and I only really remember him from the Thor movies. I mean, I didn't really watch a lot of his young career when he was, making movies, but I mean, I don't know how they, how do you replace a guy like that moving forward, but Marvel's is pretty good at, mixing things and putting bandages on things, if you will. They kind of did the same thing with Black Panther. So I feel pretty confident that they'll, make sure that he's not forgotten because he was a big instrumental. He was very instrumental in Thor's movie. So that was tough.
Yeah. So big rest in peace to Ray Stevenson. And of course, thoughts, out to his family as they mourn his passing. you know, fear not. There'll be a lot of fans out there that will be putting their positive thoughts in their family's direction. So let's move along now to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. This was probably for me the first two Guardians were two of the top five Marvel movies, and the third one I was looking forward to just as much. It was the final movie for James Gunn before he jumps over to the DC universe. Brad, what were your thoughts going into this movie for what we knew was supposed to be the final adventure of this version of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it's one of those things. My daughter and I go to all these movies. So she's junior in high school, and this is our thing. We've gone to Marvel movies since she was little, right? And so this is one of those things where we went into this movie and we're kind of thinking, you know, you hate to see it end, because these characters are fantastic in Guardians of the Galaxy. They are a fantastic conglomerate of characters, and I really enjoyed them. So when I went into this, it was almost like, gosh, I hate to see it end. You know what I mean? So you didn't want to see it end. But I was really excited to see where they went with the Rocket story. And you know, as it turns out, we'll talk more later, I'm sure, about that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, for me, I never want to see these things end. First of all, I don't, because I'm a big fan of them. And I mean, I you know, when Marvels first came out, Guardians of the Galaxy was on a back, it was on a back burner for me. Then I started watching them, and then, you know, Chris Pratt, you know, kind of got me hooked on, and then Gamora. But then this last one, the third one, I think they outdid themselves. It was well done. And, you know, I was thinking, like, oh, my movies, what's going to happen? And, you know, and are they all really going to be done? And, you know, we don't want to spoil the movie for everybody who's not seen it. You know, there's going to be another one. It's going to look a little different, but there's definitely going to be another one. But I was really, really impressed with how well they did and the actors in it. The one for me, though, you know, I don't want to jump the gun, but the Adam Warlock guy, the person who played that, you know, Will Poulter, I just think about his previous movie, guys. I'm sorry. I struggle with that one.
Yeah, I thought he had the angry toddler face down really well for that. One note that we'll make for you before you watch the movie, if you haven't watched it yet and you do have Disney Plus, make sure you watch the Guardians with their Christmas, their holiday special.
Yeah.
Because sure. it is funny. It goes between live action and cartoon, but it actually has there's some payoffs in the movie if you watch the Christmas or the holiday special on Disney Plus. And I'll give James Gunn credit. He makes it worth your time. I watched it just because I was like, well, might as well see if it's got to be better than the Star Wars Christmas special. And it was really good product. I was kind of amazed. So if we start off the movie, you know, we want to find out the relationships, and they kind of have to get us started. So we have really, I guess, as we watch this beginning, they kind of set the table with an extremely depressed Peter Quill. Yeah. And he was getting
that.
And basically, because, you know, his ex-girlfriend Gamora was from the pluck from 2014, and she didn't remember anything from the first two movies when they fell in love. And so really that kind of sets up, you know, where the team is, you know, because you have, you know, Gamora's sister who's angry, but that's kind of what she does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you've got Drax and you've got Mantis and Groot all around there. And of course, one of the things that we get an introduction early in the movie is we get to see Adam Warlock, and that is a character from that has been shown. They showed his birthing chamber, or his whatever you want to call it. It looked reminiscent of a gold-plated Captain America, you know, where he got his the chamber that he got his powers from, where he was going to be genetically engineered to be, you know, some sort of Guardian Destroyer, and we see that. And of course, the other introduction we get relatively early in the movie is the High Evolutionary, and it was played by the same actor who's in The Peacemaker and played one of the good guys who ended up eventually getting taken out permanently by the bad guys. And this setup, really, they're setting up the origin of Rocket. And I'm trying not to get too much into the actual details of what's going on. But, Brad, I thought what Rocket kind of, you know, going to his origin about how he was put together, that was a disconcerting part of the movie. I didn't know how I felt for part of that.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's hard to watch at times. I mean, you know, when you think about what he'd gone through and so forth. But then again, I guess it gives you that everybody has what is it? They say you can't have the hero unless he goes through some tribulations and so are some difficulties. I mean, nobody's a hero until they have that. And so I think that's where Rocket was, and we had to see that. I think it also shows there's so much more depth to that character than just a talking raccoon. You know what yep. I mean? I mean, just yep. the depth is really good. And I thought they really tied in. What I liked that they did was they tied in not only just the character arc. It wasn't just a single character arc or a single redemption story. There are multiple redemption stories and multiple stories that kind of tie everything together. Like, and you know, we make fun of a lot of these characters for things that they do, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, they all had their positive. They all had they're all part of the team. They all contributed, and they were all did their thing. And I thought it was really good in that regard.
Well, I'll tell you, for me, I watched with my daughter too. We've seen every Marvel movie together. Even when she was in college, I was driving down to go see her. She would come home, and I'll tell you, you know, I was kind of in tears with Rocket. It was I'm gonna man up. It was sad to see him and what they did to him, because I didn't know that. I mean, they've shown bits and pieces of other Guardians of the Galaxy movies where you saw his back, but you didn't know the backstory, how he was really literally put together. But it was really sad. And also, you know, you learn, and they told us how, you know, how smart he got and why he is so intelligent, why he can, you know, figure out any kind of plane in the world or to fly, because he's just one of those smart guys. And you know, he had friends, you know, that was a big part of it. You know, I don't want to ruin that, but it was an emotional part seeing that. The Adam Warlock part, to me, I've been waiting for that, because, I mean, I'm really into, like, this power thing. And, like, I've always been told, like, you know, obviously no Superman, which is DC, but, like, with the Marvels, it's always been, like, you know, Captain Marvel is supposed to be really strong, the most powerful person in Marvels, but then sometimes you'll read it's going to be Adam Warlock. So I kind of like to see that part, you know, of him. They really add him to it, not just bits and pieces, because I, you know, obviously he's good and he's bad. And, you know, I just really want to, I hope they don't just introduce him and then we don't see him again.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I'm one of those geeks, you know, I've got like 25 long boxes of comics and have collected for years. Now I do the Marvel Universe Online because it's only $9.99 a month and I don't have to have all the storage and I don't pay $30 a week for comics. But Adam Warlock is definitely a different creature, because in the comic books, he's like an all-knowing, almost like a messiah type of guy. And this one, Adam Warlock comes out, you know, kind of just like a kid, doesn't have any emotional maturity whatsoever, but in a body that can probably go toe to toe with Thor or Hulk. And that made for an interesting combination. Let me go back to the little animal thing. I would tell people, if you're going to watch it, have it strapped on for that part, because, you know, it really goes into some of the, like, basically the character, the High Evolutionary, what he in his mind, because nobody thinks they're the bad guy, right? Everybody thinks they're the good guy in the story. So he thinks he's trying to take existing life and, quote, perfecting it, and doesn't really realize that by, you know, adding metal appendages to a you know, a normal being, that there's some pain and agony in there. And as you're adding these new genes to evolve something over, you know, instead of millions of years in terms of 90 seconds, you know, the pain and all that. And I really felt like I was sitting there and I went back to somebody saying, you know, like no animal testing in these fragrances and colognes. And I found myself, my mind went to like what it must be like in one of some of those animal testing areas. And, you know, bottom line is that I want the world to have the best medicines. And I guess I wouldn't be man enough to inject them into animals if it, and find out that, well, that good thing we didn't do that to a person, but I definitely don't have the metal for that, because I found that to be a very, it was very interesting how those creatures kind of bonded together. It was kind of intense, the pain that they had to go through to bond that way.
Yeah, it was definitely disturbing. I would agree with what Kit said. I think that the one thing about it is that you look at it and say, you know, I think the best villains are guys who actually, you know, Thanos is one of the greatest villains of all time because he thought he was doing the world a service. And so was this guy. I mean, they're trying to help the world. And yes, that's their belief. They believe in their heart that what they're doing is what needs to be done. And they're the only one that is got the foresight, the intelligence, the wherewithal to do it, to do the difficult things. And somebody has to do it, and they're willing to do it. And so that's kind of their thing. I think that kind of makes them conflicted and also makes them a great villain.
It's kind of sick to say this, but like, I'll use Thanos. I mean, his method, he was right. That's, you know, people are hungry and you get rid of half the population, then there's no people aren't starving anymore. And I get it, but I don't like it. But, you know, again, that's, you know, you're right. That's what makes them nasty and bad villains. And, you know, Marvel, they definitely have their share of bad villains. And, you know, Kang the Conqueror is another one.
You know, and if I was Tony Stark, I would have been like, hey, time out, dude. Instead of you killing half the people, couldn't you just make all the planets twice as big? Then we'll have more resources.
Well, hey, you got all these stones. Can't you just make things better? I mean, exactly. Just grow some more food. It's all good. We'll have some new water and food. I can make it.
Yeah, you really do. Yeah,
reality, you know?
I'm with you. I would have tried that before fighting, because I don't know if I would have been able to land many punches on him. And so I think the interesting thing is then, of course, you get yourself into your typical Guardians of the Galaxies, which means, you know, we've got a family and they've got to try to fight to get Rocket back. And they've got to, you know, show that, you know, he's worth it. And then the adventures, I think, from that point, I think they kind of set up the emotional focus of the film very early. And then the rest of the film is, can they reunite the Guardians and can they come together as a family to overcome the High Evolutionary and all of the inventions that he has. And I found it was, again, to me, I guess I thought Chris Pratt's performance was really good, because his endless frustration at not having the woman that he fell in love with, and yet the only way he can really deal with it is childish temper tantrums and cut downs, and, you know, he's kind of the guy who in walking away from something has to have that comment over his shoulder, so he gets the last word in, which then causes problems. And I also thought it was interesting, but Drax, I thought his, all of a sudden he found his niche, where he found a group of people that he could communicate with, and he had some wisdom as opposed to, you know, that doesn't go over my head, I would catch it.
Yeah, I thought Drax's arc was really good, and And it kind of showed what he was. And I think he went through all this thing. He was just, but again, it's another story arc where he's finding himself. What am I? You know, I want to be Drax the Destroyer. Well, what am I really? You know, is that what I am? The other character, you know, what character that came in was awesome was Castle.
Yeah.
I thought Castle was great too. You got guys like this too. I got this guy, you know what I mean? Like, I thought he was fantastic. Nathan Fillion. So yep. I thought he was really good there. And so you get those little cameos like that. You got Sly Stallone cameo, which was always fun, you know, to see him. But yeah, so I enjoyed that. I thought Quill was great. I thought the Drax storyline was great. I think it's always interesting to see where they go and how they, I think for me, and I guess this is one of those things where it's never anticipation is, what do they always say? Anticipation is more powerful than the reality.
Yep.
And so I think always looking to see where they're going with the next arc as this story goes through, it's like, oh, okay, they can go here now, they can go here now, and they can go here, and what can they do with this character and that character? So I think that's the fun part for me, and they really opened up a lot of options for the future.
I will say this, Mike, you kind of mentioned this, and this group is really close. They're very, very, very close in all the movies. They always seem to get each other's back no matter what happens. You know the whole situation with Gamora and Peter Quill. And I think it's kind of funny when she gets mad and she accidentally gives him a knee shot. I always look forward to those in the movies because Quill, he can't quit. But to me, I will say this. This is the first time in all three of the movies where Mantis and Drax, you know, and Nebula, they really had bigger roles this time. I felt in the past, you know, they were important. But, you know, with Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah, you know, you saw a little bit of Drax because he was the big guy, but it was Gamora and Peter. But this time, Nebula was really, really involved this time. And so, and I thought her comedy was great. And, you know, Mantis, I thought her comedy was good. So that's one part of people haven't seen it. You know, you're going to see a different side this time because they typically didn't have roles like that. And they were just as big as part as anybody else. And Groot. So he's no longer the little baby. He looks like a grown man now.
Yeah, he's about Hulk size the way he rolls around that place. I thought that, and I thought the interesting thing is, you know, when they market these movies, you see all the one-liners on the commercials, and they're there and they're funny, but the humanity behind those comments and the closeness of the characters and kind of how they learn to trust and support one another, I think is sometimes those funny little quips and stuff, they do a really good job, but they build so much deeper of a relationship. But boy, those quips work great for marketing.
They do. You know what other character was great? How about Cosmos?
Oh yeah.
It's great. What a great line. You know, just like,
I'm not so a bad typical. Dog.
I'm not a bad dog. Call me a bad dog. Take it back. Take it back.
And I also think the voice that's done by Bradley Cooper on Rocket is kind of I don't know if people really appreciate the emotion with which he communicates through those. I mean, you really can, when he's upset, you know, you can almost feel the anger dripping off of his words. When he's sad, you can feel it. And I think that's, I don't know how the heck Bradley Cooper does that. So on top of being like this really great looking dude, he's got this ability to act even on the voice acting level. That's just out of this world. And again, folks, we're trying to give you a little bit of flavor for it without too many spoilers so that it won't ruin. We won't take any surprises from you. The other thing here's, I'm going to give you though, guys, my biggest complaint about a Guardian movie. When James Gunn does a movie, and he did this in his show, The Peacemaker, which is on HBO Max, and it's the John Cena Suicide Squad TV show, really is essentially what it is. He is really bad at varying the power levels of his guys. Like at one point, Drax looks like he just isn't very strong. He's getting one-shotted by you know, guards, and you think he's going to die. And then a few minutes later, he's knocking down an armored space lock door to get into a spaceship. And then at one point, High Evolutionary, with just hand motions, can handle Adam Warlock, who, again, he's darn near Thor level in this movie. And with just hand motions, he can almost take him through a wall and out into space. And then later on, he can get attacked by a Rocket and not be able to defend himself. Or I guess at other times, I should say. So sometimes I find his movies frustrating because, as good of a writer as he is, sometimes it seems like the power levels are what's convenient for the scene.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
But wasn't the Rocket scene earlier before he had those powers?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and he did make the statement that he had to look at himself, you know, to get a little better.
I think with Drax too, many times, like sometimes he looks like he's the strongest guy ever, and then sometimes he looks like he's a kitten.
Yeah, then he rolls into Ronan and gets just absolutely slaughtered.
Yeah. Yep. No comparison. So yeah. No, I think that's true, but I think that's when you're talking about superheroes. If they're not Superman, there's always a chance they could be beaten, right?
Yeah, So if we're going to do this movie on a 10-point scale, where would you put this one, Brad? And then also, once you're done with that, give me your order for ranking the three Guardians of the Galaxy's movies.
Man, I would actually, and maybe it's recency bias, I would put this one first. I think this was the best one. But I would rank them all. I think I would give this one a 9, but the other ones be more like 8.5 and 8. So, I mean, I would probably go 3, and then I would go 1, and then 2 would be my order. But I don't think that there's a huge discrepancy, right? You know what I mean? Right. I think they're all good. I liked all three. This one is my favorite. And I don't know whether this one, because it was so personal with Rocket and the animal, and just I really liked, obviously it's very humorous and it's fun, and the story arc was fun and the action was great, whatever. But I just really thought it was like, and this sounds weird, Rocket was very humanized in this in this movie. And I know he's a raccoon, but he was humanized as a raccoon in this movie.
Ked?
Well done, Bradley. For me, I'm going to give it an 8 or a 9, 8.5. I'll give it a ring, 8.5. To me, it was the best of the three. I have to go 1, 2. I was not a fan of the second one. I just didn't. It was too cheesy. It was corny to me out of all three of them. That's why I was so impressed with this one, probably, because the second one, it didn't move the needle for me. I don't know why. I don't even know what was it wasn't one of the better ones, I'll put it that way, for me. But the third one, which is obviously huge, you know, because of Rocket, you know, which we've talked about a number of times now, but just the whole, you know, backdrop of it, you know, with, you know, Peter finally just saying, hey, you know what, Gamora, I loved you, but it's over. You know, that romance was cute and hot while it lasted. That part was great. I love that one, you know, the way they, you know, ended that part of it, even though I know a lot of people hate to see things end the way they do. But that was the best one for me. But the second one, I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah, and I'll rank this as my second favorite. I like the first best, and then this one, and then number two. And number two is just because I'm a comic geek. Ego was not a Celestial. He shouldn't have been played as a Celestial. He was a living planet, and they got too far from the comics for me. But you know, 99.4% of all people who see these movies have never read the comic book, so it's totally irrelevant, my point of view on this. I think all these movies are probably between 8 and 9, and you know, the third one, I mean, all of them, you go down, you're going to have an entertaining time as you watch them. And I do think that you get the, I would love to see a book, you know, written on these movies, because the way the way these characters come across on the screen makes you think that the actors seem to like one another as well. And it seems like they're having fun out there as they do it. So, you know, right here, folks, you've got basically three people that are giving this movie, you know, 8.5 or higher. So this would be a definite must see. Brad, any final Guardians thoughts or anything that we didn't talk about that you think the fans will want to hear?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I would say is that, you know, it, and this sounds weird, it doesn't tie up everything. It doesn't have the happy ever after ending. And I like that because it opens up for more. So even if it's the finale, there's still more to come. So from these some of these characters.
So wouldn't you be afraid of being the director who has to follow James Gunn if there ever is a Guardians 4?
Yeah, but you know, millions of dollars can alleviate my fear.
Yeah.
So you know, so depending on how much they pay me, I will have less fear. So
perfect.
No, but you're exactly right, and I think they can do some really good comic book. You know, you're a comic book geek, and I'm not like at your level, but a little bit, and so I think they can go. They can move in the right direction here and have some really good stuff as they move forward. So yeah, I would go see it though. I would go see it definitely.
I'm gonna be a homer. I do think there's gonna be a Guardians of the Galaxy 4. The way it ended, you know, but you know, Marvels, they are notorious for being, you know, different and better than everybody else in the ending. The crew, the cast, I do think there's gonna be another one. When, I don't know. But before we go, I have a question for the both of you. Marvels has done a tremendous job. They have brought in a lot of people. The three of us, we're about the same age. And I can't speak for you guys, but I remember every Saturday morning getting up at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, getting a bowl of cereal and watching this. And now we got our kids who are watching these movies, and they're just as entertained as we are. So I guess my question is, out of all the Marvel movies that we've seen this generation, which is your favorite one? If you had to pick one Marvel movie,
Brad,
Infinity War.
Scratching those beards. You guys are scratching those beards.
Infinity War. Infinity War is my favorite. I thought Infinity War was great. That would be my number one.
Yeah, and I will go. I'll go a little bit different than you because I'm going to give this movie a higher ranking because they took a lot of risks. I don't know that I like it perfectly, but I thought that Endgame, they could have just had we fight it out, everything's happily ever after, and they didn't do that. Now we can debate whether they should have done that, but I thought the Russo brothers took a huge chance by not going with it. They kind of went unstandard with their that second half of the Avengers movie. But for me, the only thing that has been better for me in the movies in the last 20 years than the Marvel movies was growing up reading Lord of the Rings and seeing that. And the two biggest movie moments I can tell you as a guy who watches way too many movies was the opening scene of Lord of the Rings where you see that green, that's what I've read Lord of the Rings like 30 times, and that's exactly what it looked like in my mind. And as at the time that came out around 2000, 1999 ish, and I actually like almost, you know, I saw the midnight showing, I almost cried watching that first scene because it looked like it. But the second best scene I remember was the introduction of Peter Quill when he's got that song on. And then they freeze frame and it says the Guardians of the Galaxy, like the cover page of a comic book, the opening cover page. Like some of them you do where you open at the first page, you turn it and it's a full page spread. And to me, that thing just hit me. And I thought Guardians of the Galaxy was a dumb idea because they aren't even like a third tier superhero group. They're like a fifth tier. And somehow they were able to take these people that literally didn't sell more than 30,000 copies a month and turned them into a worldwide craze. But those two scenes, the start of the first Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and the start of that Guardians movie, I'll forever remember those because they were just, I was totally captured.
One thing I'll say too, just following up there real quick, I know we're wrapping up, but I would say also, I don't think it's always indicative of comic book readers. how a movie's going to perform. You know
totally,
what I mean?
Just, totally.
Because if that were true, the DC comics would probably be, because I bet there are more people who've read DC comics, I would say, are more familiar with DC comics than they were with Marvel when this all started. And yes, now they're more familiar with Marvel.
And Iron Man, to be honest with you, Iron Man was the second tier. I mean, because when you look at sales historically for the last 50 years, it's either X-Men or Spider-Man, depending on what era you're from. Right. And then Wolverine moves into there. And those are your top three. Thor, Hulk, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Doctor Strange. They haven't been at the top of the meters. But because Marvel didn't have the rights to the X-Men or Spider-Man, they had to make do, because if it would be a totally different world if they had had those, they would have made X-Men and Spider-Man before they ever got to, and who knows, you know, because and the other thing is what if they had passed on, what if Tom Cruise had said, all right, I'll take Iron Man, you know, that Marvel didn't want him trying to get control of, you know, and like he has of Mission Impossible, which are good movies too, but and so they went past him. And you think about it, if you take Robert Downey Jr. out of this, is the Marvel universe what it is today? I'm not certain it is.
I don't think it is. Tony Stark was huge. I mean, sorry, Robert Downey Jr. I think because he set the tone early with Marvel's.
Yeah, I think he was great.
You know, yeah, he was. And
it's hard to envision anybody else being him.
Well,
I mean, it's really hard. And now I do think Tom Cruise is probably a guy who could do a good job there. But, I mean, Tony Stark is Robert Downey Jr.
Well, and what I would love to see is when they get this multiverse cranking out, one of the things I'd do if I was Kevin Feige, and of course I'm not Feige, you know, and so he's probably like nine steps ahead of me with better ideas, but occasionally you can bring in people from other universes. So I would be talking to Tom Cruise, like, look, man, we got to have you be like the crazy Iron Man from Earth 554. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And we got to have, you know, and like John Krasinski, we're going to get, you know, we're going to have you come back from another, you know, because I think they're going to go with Adam Driver, which I thought Krasinski was the perfect Mr. Fantastic, but, and you can take guys that you like as actors and bring them into the role if you need to have a little bit of zest, you know, at this.
Hey, but I'll tell you what, if you guys get a chance real quick, there's rumors, not fake rumors, that there may be another Iron Man in the making. I mean, I think Robert Downey Jr. is missing the Marvel series. Where they're going to put him at, I don't know. I saw on a late night show one night, they asked, and he smiled, and he basically said yes. So where they're going to put him at, I don't know, but I'm sure they'll find a great spot for him. I just thought he was good. You know, Brad mentioned it, you know, Robert Downey Jr. being that guy. If you watch the old cartoons, he had that goatee, and that's what Robert Downey Jr. has. He looks perfect, and he played a good part for that.
Well, and look, the Iron Man from the comic books that I grew up with was an alcoholic womanizer who was depressed half the time. So Robert Downey Jr. kind of said, I don't think I'm going to play it that way. And I think, thank God he didn't, because I don't know that there would have been a lot of redeeming, you know, factors there. And he turned him into kind of like if you had Spider-Man's wit with the genius of Tony Stark, and, you know, he's really done it. And for me, you know, the only other person that I've watched in this recent generation that I think is like perfect in their role, Chris Hemsworth is pretty close as Thor, although I think he's a little too jokey. But the other one is, and I know I'm in the minority on this, but I think Ben Affleck plays, he plays the perfect older Batman.
Oh, fantastic. Now, I'm interested to see Michael Keaton as the older.
Oh, that'll be Batman. Fun, won't it?
Be good. But Ben Affleck's really, he gets a bad rap. I thought he was really good in that role as the older Batman. What's your superpower? I'm rich.
I know. Well, and the funny thing is when you look at it, like Ben Affleck's Batman he was kind of playing a riff off of Frank Miller's The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Returns. If you have a chance to go to find those comics online or watch something on YouTube, that's where Ben Affleck kind of was. And then Michael Keaton is going to be the Batman more from Kingdom Come, which is another comic that's kind of based in the future and where it's less physical Batman and more using the technology. So I think that Flash movie, folks, we will be reviewing that. I have tickets for opening night. You know, it's on June 15th, a Thursday night, not that I'm planning on it or anything, but that Flash movie, I just saw both Stephen King and Tom Cruise talked about how good it was because they got a preview version and they said it was amazing. So the superhero movie is not dead yet. All right, folks, with that, we are going to head into a commercial break. And guess what? We're going to talk some recruiting. I've got Brad and Ked here. So just with a little bit of blackmail and some pictures from a long time ago, I've talked them into giving us just a couple tidbits as we will move forward with the show. But first, this message from our sponsors.
At Busey Wealth Management, we're proud to partner with individuals, families, and foundations, ensuring possibilities become achievements. From preserving and enhancing your assets to securing your legacy for future generations, we're focused on your success. Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini. Member FDIC.
Thank you for listening to that commercial. We appreciate it here. This is Illini Guy Mike Kegley, and we have Illini Guy Brad Sturdy along with Kedrick Prince, Director of Recruiting. We're going to do a little bit of just a real quick change of pace here between movie reviews, because we are some of the best movie reviewers in the state of Illinois. But we did want to talk a little bit about Illinois basketball recruiting, because Brad averages about 500 text messages an hour and Ked's about 300 an hour, people wanting to know what's going on. So we'll just give you a little tip. Now, if you really want to know everything, this is where you go to IlliniGuys.com and you go to the message boards. And if you're a subscriber, you get to read all sorts of info like this, and it keeps you up to date on what's going on with Illini recruiting, which, Brad, I think the operative word with Illini recruiting is exhausting, because it just never ends. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I don't know how Ked feels, but I'm worn out, man. I can't imagine what the coaches feel like. About the time you think it's done and something else pops up and another thing, and it just never ends. And, you know, it used to be the day it was, you know, you're always busy covering high school recruiting. Now with the portal, it's just insanity.
Yeah, and it's almost it was interesting. And then I'll let you jump in, Ked. When I was at the EYBL thing here in Dallas, I was shocked. There was a decent media contingent, but not nearly what I saw a couple of years ago when some of the big tournaments came through Dallas. So it's almost like people are covering what's going on with the transfer portal, and the high school stuff is almost secondary. Ked, you want to jump in now?
I use the word fatigue. You know, the reason I use the word fatigue is because we're following a group of guys, and it's the same group of guys. And like Brad said, it's not every day. It's almost every 3 or 4 hours, something different is happening. And, you know, and it's exhausting for us at times covering it. I know it's tough for the fans because they're waiting and everybody's, you know, standing by their phones waiting for that message. And, you know, I know the coaches just have to be just drained because they're the ones who are talking to the kids and they're the ones who are talking to the families and their camps. And, you know, one person may want this and then one person may say that. It's just a long, long process. And Mike, you know, the transfer portal has literally, I mean, we can say that, but it has literally changed the game of college athletics, because that's what everyone's focused. Most teams are focused on, not all of them. You know, I wrote a piece today about Tom Izzo of Michigan State. He was pretty successful, and he's not, you know, selling his soul to the transfer portal. I'm not saying all the coaches are doing that, but it's different. You know, you're right. You go to these sporting events and the coaches are there, but the fans and media is not like it once was. So it's a good assessment.
So, Brad, is there any type of status report, you know, kind of in general that you can talk about? Because I know that in recruiting, I think Brad has the trademark on recruiting is fluid. And that's probably the best statement I think I've ever heard to describe recruiting, because you can literally get an inside information and then get the exact opposite in less than an hour. And I get a chance, folks, I'm not an insider by any stretch, but since I know both Brad and Kat, every once in a while, I'll get a few tidbits here and there, and it's just amazing how things can change. But is there any type of update or any time frame that people can hope that things get done by that you can share?
Yeah, I think by the end of May 31st is the drop dead date for Hawkins and Shannon to either come back to school if they are going to do that. I think both guys actually are leaning that way. Ked might have heard differently. I think that's where they're leaning. We'll see what happens over the next few days. I know they have a couple workouts still scheduled. So I believe that they've told people. I know at least in Terrence Shannon's case, I think he's told people around the program that, you know, his plan is to come back, barring he wants to be guaranteed money. Well, guaranteed money is not probably on the table right now. And then, of course, the other guy is Ray J. Dennis. I expect something quickly with him. Hopefully. That was actually a text I got from one of the Illinois coaches today. It was soon, hopefully. So we'll see what he does. I mean, you know, and they have other guys that they're looking at as well, just in case. They've got a backup. They've got backups because they know they have to add another point guard.
Ked, anything that you're hearing? Is that pretty much the way you're hearing it as well?
Yeah, I mean, we are both hearing the exact same thing. The chances of Coleman Hawkins and Terrence Shannon both coming back, I think that, you know, that would be huge. And they didn't. It's not that they didn't have great tryouts, NBA workouts, because they did, but, you know, it's a different day and age now because, you know, they want to make money, and, you know, like we've talked about before, they don't want to make a mistake and just say, hey, I'm in the NBA and then I'm going to do this, and then you throw away an opportunity to make some NIL money in college. So, you know, that part, you know, like Brad mentioned, the 31st is that deadline. I know the Ray J. Dennis situation, the point guard situation that everybody's talked about, it's exhausting, but I will make this one statement. You know, a lot of people are really excited, but the thing, Illinois is not the only school that has NIL money, and there's other schools that have attractive TV contracts. So, you know, the coaches are working their, you know, their tails off to try to land these kids. And so it's not as easy as it was a couple years ago when you went out and found a sharpshooter in Alfonso Plummer, who was a third-team All-Big Ten player, you know. So the competition is getting tougher now.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw one NBA factoid out there, which kind of blew my mind. Last night, the top three scoring players were all, you know, were from Miami, with Gabe Vincent, Duncan Robinson, and Caleb Martin. They had 29, 22, and 18 points in their game. And the two things that they shared is obviously they're all three Miami Heats, or are they Hots? I'm not certain what a singular Heat is, but and they all three were undrafted, which tells me if you're going to be, you know, no matter what happens in the NBA, you better be able to shoot. So, you know, kids, if you're out there and you think you're going to grow to 6'10", start working on that jump shot about, I don't know, 2 years old, and keep working on it until you make it. But any other last second recruiting things, or are we pretty much good with that recruiting update?
I think you got most of it. I think then, you know, once this finally ends, then the shift's going to go to 2024, where they're really going to focus on guys. And they do plan on bringing in probably, obviously they already have, you know, one guy committed in 2024. I think they're going to bring in three more. I would expect them to have three more guys in 2024, a guard, a wing shooter, and another big guy who pair with Morez Johnson.
Yep. And we had, just so you know, you can go to lineiguys.com. I wrote a few articles about what we saw at the Dallas EYBL. And then Brad will be at Memphis EYBL coming up. We'll have coverage there as well. And then Brad will be at the Peach Jam. Meanwhile, Ked is going to be covering the upper Midwest as well with big tournaments. So we will keep you up to date on the 2024s. There are some good players. And I will tell you, if you get the opportunity and you know that Mean Streets is going to be playing in a tournament that you have the ability to go to, you can go take a look at Morez Johnson, who is the centerpiece of the 2024 class. And you will be extremely pleased at what you see when you watch him play. He has an intensity that's probably only matched by his soon-to-be college coach, Brad Underwood. So with that, Ked, did you have any final things before we get back to the movie reviews?
No, just ready for the summer to get started so we can get out and watch some of these high school kids play. I feel bad because I think the high school students know that they've taken a back seat, you know, to some of the transfer portal kids. So I'm really excited to get out and to see some of these kids because, like, you know, we talked about, you know, before we started the show, we think Illinois needs to try to keep some of these high school kids, and you can keep them around for 2 or 3 years, and you can just add pieces, not have to try to revamp your roster.
Yep. So there's a lot going on, folks. IlliniGuys.com, $99 a year is the best way to kind of see when Brad or Ked is at a event and you get their thoughts. And then obviously there's occasions that I'll be out as well. And it's a lot of fun. And we try to give you comments along the way about what we're seeing. And so that you get little tidbits, you know, and then we obviously will give you the bigger, longer form articles as well. So in just a minute, we'll be back with another movie review.
Slow down, they say. You're getting older. Relax. Seriously, you're on a mission. You've got places to go, grandkids to see. At OSF Healthcare, we want you to be the best you possible, whoever you are, wherever you're going, whatever your mission is. We're here to support it, because that's our mission. Your life, our mission. Learn more at osfhealthcare.org/yourway.
Hey, and this is Mike Kegley. I'm back here with Kedrick Prince. We are going to talk about Fast 10. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to reveal something here. I look at the Fast and Furious, along with the Transformers movies, as guilty pleasures. They may not be that great a movie, but for an hour and a half to 2 hours, I don't think about anything else. I enjoy them. And yes, there are moments that I have to put credibility aside so that I can believe in what's going on the screen. But for the most part, they're entertaining. This Fast X, though, this Fast X was an extremely good movie. I think they Marvelized it a little bit and came up with a gem. Ed, what'd you think?
I watched them. I watched them all, but I didn't, you know, make an effort to go to the movie theater. If I saw it at the movie theater, I saw it. Or if I waited till it came on TV, I watched it, or DVD, whenever that was back in the, you know, early 1600s. But I was just, it was okay. And now, having watched this one and, you know, seeing what the possibilities are, you know, moving forward with it, I was impressed. I was glad. And Mike, to tell you the truth, when you mentioned this to me last week, I thought, oh, do I really want to go see it? Then my daughter's like, Dad, let's go see it. There's nothing going on. Then I went to see it, and oh, my goodness, I'm glad I did, because it was well worth sitting in that movie theater for 2 hours and 21 minutes, because that's what the, you know, the running time of the movie was. So it was well done. It was one of the better ones, I have to honestly admit, even though we're missing some key important people. I thought this was really good, and there's tons of cliffhangers.
Yes, yes. And I will tell you that Jason Momoa steals this movie. And we all knew that he had a decent, you know, touch with humor with his work as Aquaman, with the one-liners in what were relatively dour Justice League movies. But I am telling you, he is... he plays a semi, like, for this universe, he might be the Joker character of this universe, but with the physical presence of, you know, I mean, he's bigger than Vin Diesel. So I thought we had a really Momoa shined way more. Man, he's an entertaining guy, but I thought he stole this whole thing. What did you think?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, he was funny from the time the movie started until the very end. You know, Toretto, obviously, or Vin Diesel, is the focal point of the show, you know, and Roman and everybody else, and, you know, Letty. But I'm going to tell you, you know, Jason was comical. He's big, and just his jokes and his mannerisms and the parts that he played, the clothes that he wore, the jewelry that he wore, it was just, it was priceless. When you see a guy that big, and you know, I watched him in Aquaman and all the other DC movies, and here's this big hunk of a guy that can pick up, you know, my house probably with one hand, and then he was a total opposite, you know, when you saw him in Fast X. But they did a really good job of bringing him in, and he's probably, like you mentioned, he's going to probably be a mainstay, because regardless of what anybody tell you, if you listen to this podcast, do not listen to the movie reviews, because whoever was watching it, I don't know if they were sleeping. This was entertaining. By far one of the most thrilling action movies I've seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah, and I got to be honest with you. You know, there's a couple things. First off, if you're in a theater that has alcohol, only drink every time you hear the word family if you have a designated driver, because you will be not coherent by halfway through the movie. But you get to the point where, I mean, there's about 10 characters in this movie. When you figure, you know, the crew that he runs with. And then we even had a few things, which this is what comes from the WWE, and now Marvel Comics is doing it a little bit as well. But that's when you do the heel that turns face and the face that turns heel. Because we had, you know, Charlize Theron, her character now, to kind of reinvent the relationships a little bit, is at least posturing and posing as a good guy now, which totally changes the dynamic of the people who are the characters who deal with her, who have just, you know, in the past have really hated her. And I think when you did that, I think it kind of shakes up the calculus a little bit between all the people. But I thought it was an interesting turn. And of course, you know, you have, you know, Jason Statham has his character. You have Brie Larson, Captain Marvel, who is a one-note, emotionless actress. So she took more of a role here where she's kind of a little bit of the good guy and actually smiles a little bit. I think she's trying to play against her kind of reputation that the MCU got her. And then you have, you know, John Cena's in this, Jordana Brewster, Helen Mirren, Rita Moreno. I mean, it is just a total crazy type of thing when you're looking at this. And even Alan Ritchson is in this, and he is Amazon's Jack Reacher. And he's in this movie as well. And that guy is, you know, again, if you like Amazon Prime's Reacher, he's in this movie enough to make you want to watch as also. And so you get a bunch of characters, and then they kind of shuffle the deck so that, you know, some characters who work well together are sent off on missions together. And they also will put some combinations together, like John Cena got to work with Dom's child, which is, you know, really what John Cena with his WWE background, particularly with his Make-A-Wish Foundation, is famous for relating well with kids. He did a wonderful job. I thought all in all, this movie was much more entertaining. And while it's a little bit longer, I didn't have any moments where I felt like the movie was dragging. I was engaged the whole time.
Oh, most definitely. You know, you went through a list of characters who's in the movie, and I was
only got about half, kid.
I know, but you left out one guy that was really important, considering this is a lot called an Eye on the Line, so there's some Illinois ties. Ludacris, who's from Champaign.
Yep.
You know, who grew up in Champaign, Illinois. He was, you know, I loved his character as always, but one of my favorite, and I just do, is The Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson. Limited role, small role, but him being in it, you know, obviously moving forward, which we'll probably get to here in a second, you know, is going to be huge. And I know there's obviously, you know, if you follow, you know, Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel, they don't, you know, they're not homies and best buds. So, but he had a small role in it. I was glad to see Brie Larson. I'm a big, huge Brie Larson fan. I really like her. You know, when we talk about Marvels, she's one of my favorite actors. I like Captain Marvel's role, and I think she's becoming a star within herself because she's been asked to do a lot of different, play a lot of different parts. So she was huge in it. And also, Cypher, you know, she was a really instrumental this time. I liked it. I mean, I can say, like you mentioned, Mike, it was a lot of action in it. You know, the characters in it, you know, if you go online and you look at all the characters, I mean, it's remarkable and it's growing. You know, it really is. And, you know, I mentioned the cliffhanger, and if you do get a chance to see it, you know, I hope some of people tweeted us or sent us messages at Illini Guys or email us. What are your thoughts going to be? Because, you know, some people, you know, are they coming back? Aren't they coming back? What happened to them? And right away, on the way home, my with my daughter, I got on YouTube and Google and start Googling because it was that entertaining to me. And that's saying something for one of these movies because, like I said to you, I'm typically when I go to a movie theater, 9 times out of 10, it is to see a DC or Marvel movie. That's pretty much standard for me. You know, if I go see something else, you know, it's got to be special. And I'm glad I did because this one definitely, definitely was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading reviews, and I just think, look, you anytime that you do car stunts, you have to put your brain on pause a little bit because the laws of physics just don't work, you know. But you're in a movie, and if you can believe a man can fly, like we learned in 1978 with Superman, you can believe that a car can fly in a limited role. And so some of the car stunts they try to go crazy with, I kind of chuckle a little more during those. At the same time, I will say that they put together characters who are largely likable, and they do have, you know, the relationships that they build from movie to movie. And I think ultimately, as I watch this, you could really see in a couple of things, you know, obviously Diesel, you know, is executive producer and controls these things pretty tightly. He definitely did a nice job in putting this movie together, found, you know, his character again. He's a little preachy and he's roughly the same age as me. I think we're both 56. So we look a lot different though. But the bottom line is as you know, he is putting together these movies, you do detect that the actors seem to have a little bit of kinship together. And then one of the things that's most critical for any action adventure movie, the bad guy has to be believable enough. So, for example, the weakness of Arnold's movie Commando was the bad guy who played Bennett. And basically, he looked like a chunky guy who was trying to wear Freddie Mercury-style outfit. And you know, maybe in real life, this guy's the greatest fighter of all time, but it was hard to envision him being able to go toe-to-toe with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so while Commando is a fun movie, it'll never be up there with Terminator or never be up there with Predator. because the opponent wasn't that good. In this movie, you know, you think of Vin Diesel, you're thinking, well, most guys aren't going to want to, you know, get into it with Vin Diesel. Then all of a sudden you see Jason Momoa walk up and you're like, well, this guy wouldn't be afraid of him. And so the visuals are good when you see that. And then the other thing is when you look at Alan Ritchson, again, another guy who's a big guy. These guys can stand toe-to-toe with Vin Diesel and The Rock, and you think they might win.
Well, Jason obviously has the size to do it, and Alan was just – I mean, his part was unique. I mean, it, you know, as soon as you think things are going right with him, and, yeah, they throw a monkey wrench into it. But you, when you talk about villains, this is what I will tell you. Jason Momoa and Alan Ritchson, they – literally they were a step ahead of the crew every time. Every single time they thought they had it figured out, you know, they were a step ahead. And that's what that made the movie interesting. And also the comedy in it, which made people laugh. Now, Mike, you mentioned the critics online, but the movie theater I was at, people were laughing, people were cheering, exactly. People were clapping. I mean, and again, some of these people, maybe they just, I don't know what they're looking for, but I tell you this, some of the movies I go see because I'm a loser like that, I'll go back and see it again. It's worth the money to me. I would definitely go back to watch it again because sometimes you see them and you miss parts. And if I did do it, the biggest reason, no disrespect to Vin Diesel or his crew or John Cena, it would be strictly to see Jason because, you know, we know him and, I mean, his most famous role is Aquaman, and here's this big bad guy, and he's a different kind of bad guy. Like, you know, you mentioned, he is a big, I don't know how tall he is, I'm gonna say 6'5", 6'6", Joker is what he really is, and he's tough. I like him, and I hope somehow they keep his role. And you know, you talk about size, now Dwayne Johnson wasn't in it a lot, but when you see the ending, and Mike and I would definitely recommend, Mike, was it? I think it was two endings, I think, or maybe one or two endings. You might want to stick around because if you look for what could possibly happen next, if there's going to be an 11, I can assure you Jason and Dwayne Johnson might be throwing fists. And that would be one worth just a ticket alone just to see that.
Yeah, Vince McMahon would be able to sell a lot of tickets for that in the ring as well. And so this movie is set up for two more, and they've got enough different plot threads going that I think they can actually keep it, you know, sustainable, at least for one more. I don't know about two. I would tell you that as I look at it and watch the response from the crowds, the audience enjoyed it. And I've read a few reviews, and I'm thinking, you know, that, you know, if you're a movie reviewer, I guess, and you're seeing the movie, let's say on a thing at home on your TV, this probably isn't going to translate as well on small screen as it would on the big screen. This is a movie like The Guardians that you want to go see in a theater because it is larger than life. And, you know, we got to, and then some of the things were a little redundant. Like we got to see the submarine crack through the frozen ocean. So that one, now we've seen that twice. So I'll grant the movie reviewer saw that, but I really think when you look at, like, you know, Rita Moreno had a nice little moment. I thought Helen Mirren had a good one. You had Jordana Brewster in at the start of the movie. Of course, that takes you all the way back to Fast and Furious. Mm-hmm. Cena had good things. And of course you get the, you know, the rest of the group, you know, with Ludacris and company, you know, Tyrese Gibson and Natalie Emmanuel, they were off together. I thought they had great timing as a group, so they were fun. You know, Han was good, Sun Kang, and then obviously, you know, Jason Statham, to me, they were holding him for later, so he had a small part. I think we'll probably see more of him. And I thought really Brie Larson humanized herself a lot because, you know, again, the Marvel role, she's just not very, I know you enjoy her, but she's not super likable in that role. And here she smiled a little bit and, you know, showed us a side that even when she was in King Kong, she was relatively serious the whole time. So I felt like this was a good role for her to kind of be normal. And Charlize Theron, I'm sorry, she's one of the best actresses out there. And she plays this role fantastic.
She's awesome. You know, one of my all-time favorite actors, and I'm going to show my age here, is Clint Eastwood. And his son, Scott Eastwood, was in it.
Yeah, I mean,
when you sit and you look at it, and it's like he looks like a 50-year younger version of his father. Very, very impressed with that, man. I was like, and that's why we're trying to tell people, you really need to go see this because it's a great cast.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun for you. So where would you rank this movie at?
For right now, I would say compared to the other ones. For me, not going into it, I wasn't expecting a lot. I'd have to honestly say I'm going to give this an 8.5 or 9 because the action caught my attention, and Jason to me alone was worth it. He's worth 7 points himself just because of the movie. Yep. He was awesome. I mean, in my personal opinion.
Yep. I give this thing an 8, and I think Momoa, you know, you have to have a great bad guy, whether it's over the top like Jack Nicholson did with the Joker or Heath Ledger. Momoa does it. It's the most cheerful bad guy we've seen in a long time. He even takes failure relative with a chuckle. But I tell you, I think, you know, when he's on the screen, you pay attention, you smile. Some of the statements when they were doing their race at the, you know, him and Vin Diesel and the obligatory race, the drag race, were hilarious. So I would give it an 8 as well. Any final thoughts on this movie, Kev, before we let people go?
I want to see bloopers because Jason Momoa was so funny. I would like to see the bloopers and the reaction of this star-studded cast, how they reacted to some of his mannerisms and things that he said. So, I mean, it was impressive. I would recommend people to go see it. You know, if you don't have the means to go see it when it comes out on TV, I would definitely make sure you watch it because we're not just overhyping it. I think it's one of the better ones. It was 10 times better than 9 to me.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Ked. And we really appreciate you coming on here. Of course, folks, you can go to IlliniGuys.com. $99 a year gets you a subscription. You can listen to our podcast. You can go to our message boards. You get all of our articles. And you can also find, you know, we will do little movie reviews and stuff in the message boards as well. And then all of our subscribers start talking back and forth. You can get, it's kind of like an easy way to get, you know, movie reviews to see if what it is about the movies that people liked, and you might like to watch it yourself. And of course, tons of Illinois information. You can also find our radio shows, Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. Go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button. You can find the city and the day, either Friday or Saturday, and the time of the radio station closest to you. Feel free to tune in and listen. And Big Sports Radio, you can go to BigSportsRadio.com, hit the radio button, and you can do the same thing to find the Big Sports Radio broadcast that's near you. So you can join IlliniGuys.com. You can listen to our podcasts. That's Eye on the Illini, Ked's Recruiting Roundup, Sturdy for 30, and our two radio shows are released at noon on Saturdays on Central Time. And you can listen to those after all the radio stations have broadcast them. With this, this is Illini Guy Mike Kegley thanking Illini Guy Brad Sturdy and our Director of Recruiting, Kedrick Prince. Go Illini!